The scene is a room in a small manor house that has long been for sale. It is such a silent room that whoever speaks first here is a bold one. All of this room's past which can be taken away has gone. Such light as there is comes from the only window, which is at the back and is incompletely shrouded in sacking. For a moment, there is a mellow light. As if a photograph could be taken quickly, we might find a disturbing smile on the room's face. Perhaps like the Mona Lisa's, which came surely of her knowing what only the dead should know. There are two doors, one leading downstairs, the other at the back, very insignificant, though it is the centre of this disturbing history. Someone is heard clumping up the stair, and a caretaker enters. It is not she, however, who clumps. She has been here for several years and has become sufficiently a part of the house to move noiselessly in it. The first thing we know about her is that she does not like to be in this room. She is an elderly woman of gaunt frame, with a singular control over herself. There may be someone somewhere who can make her laugh still, one never knows, but the effort would hurt her face. The man who has clumped up the stair in her wake is a young Australian soldier, a private. He's a rough fellow, sinewy, with the clear eye of a man with an axe whose chief life struggle to the war game was to fell trees and see to it they did not crash down on him. Mrs. Ottery is showing him the house, which he has evidently known in other days. But though interested, he is unsentimental and looks about him with a tolerant grin. "This was the living room," she explains before abruptly excusing herself. "I'll be downstairs if you need me." The room is suddenly cold. Harry, now alone, stands motionless, and in the increasing dusk he ceases to be an intruder. He is now part of the room, the part long waited for, come back at last. Then the crafty work begins. The little door at the back opens slowly to the extent of a foot. We may conceive a thousand whispers. As it begins to close, he calls out, "Who is that? Is anyone there?" The room is in a tremble of desire to get started upon that nightly travail, which can never be completed till this man is here to provide the end. The figure of Harry becomes indistinct and fades from sight. And when the haze lifts, we are looking at the room as it was some 30 years earlier, on the serene afternoon that began its troubled story. There are rooms that are always smiling, so that you may see them if you peep through the keyhole, and Mrs. Morland's little drawing room is one of them. Her husband and a local clergyman are chatting importantly about some matter of no importance, while she is on her sofa at the other side of the room, coming into the conversation occasionally with a cough or click of her needles, which is her clandestine way of telling her husband not to be so assertive to his guest. They are all middle-aged people who have found life to be, on the whole, an easy and happy adventure, and have done their tranquil best to make it so for their neighbours. The squire is lean, the clergyman of fool habit, but you would have difficulty in deciding which was which. Both can be peppery, the same pepper. Mrs. Morland knows everything about her husband, except that she does nearly all of his work for him. And although sociable, he is not so much as a clergyman, who is reputed to know everyone in the county, and has several times fallen off his horse because he will insist on saluting all passers-by. He and his host have the pleasant habit of print collecting, and a very common scene between them is that which now follows.